As I look outside of this very, very beautiful Beis HaKvaras, the holiness of Eretz Yisrael, I see and I remember many, many dear friends of the many years that I was in Woodside. And today, I have the very sad duty of saying goodbye to another very, very dear friend. A friend of mine, a friend to all the world. A person who really made a difference to everybody that he met and everybody that knew him. Rav Shlomo Zalman, Lenny, as everybody called him. The first time I met Lenny, although he didn't meet me, I was a ninth grader. Shraga Kaviar, those from Silver Spring know him, invited me to come to his house for Shabbos. Rav Kaviar Zatzal is here as well. And we went to a shul called Summit Hill. And he told me, "You're in for a special treat. Rabbi Dickstein is going to be speaking." And I saw Kanar, a big person, and he was speaking. And he was really like a talking encyclopedia. Rashi, Tosfos, Ramban, Achronim, historians, scholarship. And people were throwing all sorts of questions at him, all sorts of kashas. And in a very good-natured way, he was just answering every single thing that people were asking him, kind of enjoying the fray. And that was my first encounter with Rabbi Dickstein. Then years later, I had the privilege of being the Rav of Woodside. And I'm a graduate of Harvard Law School. In Baltimore, that was a big yichus. But when I came to Woodside, I discovered, you know, I was just one of, you know, 10 other people that were the same. And indeed, I have to say that when Rabbi Dickstein was in law school, Harvard Law School, it actually was much more academically rigorous than it was in my day. So there was indeed a Yeridas Adoros in that law school as well. And once again, it just exhibited the tremendous brilliance that he had. But the thing is, you know, in most situations, Rabbi Dickstein was the smartest person who was in the room. That was normally the case. But the thing is, there's really so much more. It wasn't just that he was brilliant. It wasn't just that he was learned. There was a totality to the person in which, you know, they say, the Velt says, that the Chafetz Chaim was such a tzaddik that people didn't appreciate his gaonis. And they say Rav Chaim was such a gaon that people didn't appreciate his tzidkus. And in fact, Rav Chaim was even a greater tzaddik than he was a gaon. And the Chafetz Chaim was even a greater gaon than he was a tzaddik. But certain things got known. Lenny was a person who in all ways was an outstanding person, a loving parent, a loving grandparent, a person who cared about certainly everybody in the shul that we were together in. a person who loved his family, but a person who also rejoiced in all of the simchas anywhere in the community. A person who was as excited when someone else, you know, got engaged or had a child as he would be for his own. A person who was so interested and so emotionally invested in the tzaras of others and in the simchas of others. A person who had a gregariousness and a sense of humor and a joy in life that was contagious. Yes, brilliance, learning, hasmada, dedication, together with that tremendous love of Avas Yisrael and Avas Abrios and curiosity about the world and interest in so many things. You know, we're in the period of Sfiras HaOmer, and Sfiras HaOmer normally has two ideas attached to it. One is we prepare ourselves for Shavuos, we get ready for Matan Torah, so we intensify our learning, our mitzvahs, our zealousness for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But then there's another aspect of Sfiras HaOmer, the death of the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva, the great tragedy of Rabbi Akiva's life, the 24,000 students dying. And Chazal tell us in Maseches Yevamos that the 24,000 students died because they didn't show proper kavod zeh lazeh. And I mentioned before, Rav Hirsch points out that the etymology of kavod comes from weightiness, heaviness. We can assume that the students of Rabbi Akiva were not rude. They didn't push each other in line or insult each other or be over on any of the halachas bein adam b'chaveiro. But kavod is not only about behavior, it's about attitude. It's looking at the other person and seeing them as significant, as weighty, as having something to offer. Seeing them with a gravitas. Seeing their chashivas. And for whatever reason, perhaps because everybody thought they had a direct connection to Rabbi Akiva, Rav Hirsch says the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva, yes, they were polite to each other, they followed Hilchos Derech Eretz, but they didn't always see to the fullest extent the chashivas and what you can learn from the other. Lenny, our dear friend, was a person who in everyone he met and every experience in life, he saw something to learn from, he saw something positive, he saw something to be interested in. And one always felt in his presence a genuine sense of respect and chashivas for whatever that person was, learned or not learned, religious or secular, accomplished or not accomplished. He saw the goodness in others. Perhaps one might say it was almost naive sometimes in his optimism, in his hope, in his vision of human potential. But he went through life that way, and in many ways that became a self-fulfilling prophecy. That when he related to each other and to others and he saw the good in them, that good became realized. In many ways, these two ideas of Sfiras HaOmer often live in contradiction, because sometimes the more passionate we get about our Torah learning and our mitzvahs, the more we denigrate others. And sometimes, as we're more tolerant of others, we become diluted in our commitments. I'm okay, you're okay. But Sfiras HaOmer is a limud that you gotta take both. You gotta do both. Gotta be stark, gotta be strong, gotta be passionate, gotta be unwavering in your commitment to Talmud Torah and mitzvos. And at the same time, never take away from your Avas Yisrael, from your seeing the kavod in others, from your seeing the good in others, to be machshev others, to give them respect, to make them feel good, to alleviate a little bit of the pain that they may be going through. As I say, in the polarized world we live, it's often one or the other. Sfira says, gotta do both. And Reb Lenny is a Rebbe that we can have in how to do both, because that's exactly what he did. The Pasuk says in Hosea that Hashem loves the Jewish people because they are inar, they are youthful. And there was a youthfulness around Lenny, a playfulness. He saw the absurdities of life, often in a very funny way. But at the same time, he saw the beauty of life as well. Everything interested him. whether it was the statistics of fundraising for day school education in West Virginia or something, whether it was the changing demographics of the modern Orthodox communities of New Jersey, of southern New Jersey, whether it was the literary structure of Megillat Kohelet, or whether it was the influence of the Apocrypha on Midrashim, or whether it was a comparison of the Lumdus of Rav Soloveitchik of Yeshiva University with the Briskers of Eretz Yisrael, he could give you an analysis, an understanding, sometimes more than you'd even want to hear sometimes, but he had the information and he presented it in such a cogent and really interesting way. Personally, numerous times he gave me insights, and I knew when I gave a drasha or a shir and Rabbi Dickstein was there, I had to try to be right. I was not always successful because I wouldn't get away with anything. You know, if I misquoted something, there would be somebody. Now again, because he was so polite and such, he didn't always correct me, but I could sometimes tell by a twitch of the eyebrow, maybe, that maybe I didn't quote something 100% right. Sometimes he would tell me, and Baruch Hashem, I was able to learn from that as well. The fact, in his own family, he recognized that each person was a yachid. Each person is an individual. He followed Shlomo HaMelech's advice, Chanoich l'nar al pi darka. Train your child according to their derech. Each one has their own derech. People are not supposed to be cookie cutter copies of anybody, including him. Everybody was encouraged and nurtured, children and later the grandchildren, to follow their path, to be their own person, to discover their individuality in Avodas Hashem. And Baruch Hashem, the children, the sons-in-law, the sons and the daughters, and the sons-in-law and the daughters-in-law and the grandchildren have all found their pathways in Avodas Hashem, a source of unbelievable nachas that I know he will experience even in a greater extent in Olam Haba. To see the pride that he took in all of his children was just amazing. To see the tenderness when he would hold a tiny little baby, his newest grandchild, or whatever it would be. To experience the warmth, and again I have to mention Sue as well because it's really one unit. One does not exist without the other. To experience their warmth, their hospitality, the friendliness, even the inclusiveness. Whenever there was a bar mitzvah, whenever there was a simcha in Woodside, there was never such a thing as an invitation list. Everybody, 100%, every single time. It was crowded, there wasn't enough room, whatever it was, it made no difference. You don't make distinctions. Everybody is part of the family. Everybody is welcome. That was the atmosphere they created. That was the atmosphere in which their sons and their daughters were raised, and that is the atmosphere that their sons and their daughters, and daughters-in-law and sons-in-law, actually, when I say sons and daughters, I'm including in-laws, because, once again, the Dicksteins regarded all of the in-laws as equivalent to sons and daughters. I don't have to even use the differentiation there. And that is the pattern that is being continued. So it is very, very hard for us to say goodbye in the physical sense. He was a person who had really such an impact on all of us. We took him for granted. Every single Purim play in Woodside for around 40 years typically had jokes about him. I just heard now, Nisan Alanisman told me, one year there was no reference to Rabbi Dickstein, and he was a little offended. He says, how come I'm not in it? He was part of our lives. We sometimes took him for granted. We joked about him. But we always knew his heart was big enough not only to take it, but to appreciate it. And to know that it was offered in the spirit of friendship and love that we all had for him, and admiration that we all had for him. And if there's any comfort to us, at least, we realize that I think he knew how all of us felt about him. And now for sure, he'll know even more. Chazal say, Ein Ish Meis Ela L'Yishtai. When a man dies, It is as if he dies only for his wife, and the same thing, if a woman dies, it's only to the husband. We know, of course, that that Chazal is not absolutely literally true. The sons and the daughters and the grandchildren have suffered a tremendous, tremendous loss. And of course, you are the one that have all the chiyuvim of Avelis for a year. But it's also true that the Almana has a special, special measure of loss. But you should be strong in the memories that you have. You should get nachas in the magnificent family that you created. May you feel the strength of all those that love you and care about you and want to support you, whether they're in Chutz Laretz or in Eretz Yisrael. And remember, too, the basic, simple idea that everybody knows, that the reality of a person is their neshama, not their guf. Their guf is a robe, is a garment that is discarded. The reality of the person is their spiritual essence, their neshama, that is still in existence with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is the Kedusha that was created and the goodness that was created doesn't disappear. It continues to be a force in this world, in your life, in your panemius, in your memory, in every child that is raised knowing about his Zaydi, her Zaydi. He is still here. He's not gone. We don't have him physically here. That's difficult. It's harder to connect on a mechanical, physical level. But he's here. And in every step of your life, you should feel his presence, guiding you and helping you and giving you instruction in Hadracha. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu give all the Mishpacha much, much nechama. I want to ask Mechila on behalf of myself, certainly, for any Pegia in the Kavod of a great Talmud Chacham, a great Tzaddik, a Baal Chesed, a person that was Nosei B'ol Chaveiro, a person who was Mekayim, the Maimer Chazal B'Miluo, a Zeyu Mechubat, a Mechaved Es Abriyas. And may he be a Melitz Yeshur for all of his family and for all of Am Yisrael.
Loved Eretz Yisrael so much. Every time you came home to America, you were planning your next trip. Every single time. When am I going next? When you were diagnosed with your illness a few months ago, you had a trip planned already, which you kept putting on hold. I bet you're here, and you're not going home. You're not going back to the United States. You're here where you've always wanted to be. And I know you take great comfort in that. I want to thank everybody for coming. In the middle of the day, everybody has their busy schedules. It's a work day in Eretz Yisrael. I want to thank everybody for being here. This is the third Levaya for my father. We had one in Silver Spring, Maryland, yesterday morning at 10 o'clock in the morning. We had to end by 11 in order to make a flight there to Israel. We had a levaya yesterday at Kennedy Airport for people in New York, mishpacha and friends of his. And this is the third levaya, and each one has been a tremendous kavod to my father. 31 years ago, and just a few hours from now, my grandmother, my father's mother, was nefteris. Tonight is her yard site. And at my grandmother's levaya, 31 years ago, my father spoke, quoted the Gemara in Brachos of Shma Garam. Amar Rabbi Elazar Shma Garam. And he spoke a beautiful hesped. People who were at that hesped remember it. I was 12 years old and I'll never forget it. About his mother, her name was Chana Dvorah, and how her shmo was Goram, all her outstanding traits and midos. My father's name was Eliezer Chaim, and he too, the Chazal also filled, everybody can recognize it, Shmo Goram. When we're introduced to Eliezer in Parshas Lech Lecha, he's called Ben Mesek Beisi Hu Domesek Eliezer. And Rashi says on Domesek Eliezer, he says he's one pshat, he's from Damascus, but he says another pshat, that he was Dola Umashke from what he was Mekabel from his Merveim to give over to others. What he was Mekabel from Avram Avinu to give over to others, to teach others. My father grew up in an American home. His father had to go out to work at the age of 16. Didn't have the benefit of a yeshiva education. But they had many outstanding midos. They were balei pstaka. They were machshav Torah. And most of all, they were machshav Rabbanim. And there was a rav in their kehillah by the name of Rabbi Romanek, who's still alive, was at my father's bar mitzvah, spoke yesterday at Kennedy Airport. Rabbi Romanek encouraged my grandparents to send my father to Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yaakov Yosef. My grandparents were not planning to send him to Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yaakov Yosef. That was a yeshivish place at the time. But they listened because they had kavod rabbanim. And let me just say, parenthetically, kavod rabbanim was something that was inherited by my father. At all times, whatever rabbanim were involved in his life, he had tremendous kavod for them. Rabbi Breidowitz, the new rav, who's probably 40 years younger than my father, Rabbi Walter, he gives tremendous kavod to. The rabbanim who were involved in his children's lives, tremendous kavod rabbanim. That was a midah that he inherited from his parents. He went on to RJJ, and he became one of the outstanding talmidim of RJJ. He was well ahead of, he was a brilliant man. He had smicha by the age of 19. He was in the Rosh Hashiva shir, I think, before that. He was the youngest, I think, I believe he was the youngest person in the Rosh Hashiva shir. His good friend, for over 60 years, Alan Schick, said yesterday at the Levaya, the Rabbi Shafshik, who was one of the outstanding European Rosh Hashivas who came from the Mir, said that said about my father at the time that he would have been considered an Elohi in Europe. My father had the benefit of yeshiva education, but when he left the Kosli Yeshiva, he never stopped learning. My earliest memories of my father were learning, learning, learning. Making siyumim, learning. I have to make another siyum, I have to learn. In the dining room, I need quiet, learning out loud. And when I was younger, and I met friends of his from yeshiva, they would ask, oh, Rabbi Dickstein, it was common, it happened many times. Your father's still learning, he was such an outstanding Talmud Chacham. They would comment about how my father was known to learn very loudly. And they were always asked, does he still learn so loudly? And he learned so loudly all the days of his life. My father never stopped learning. On the second day of Pesach, I came into the house. He was very weak. He was falling asleep in his chair in the living room. He was falling asleep at the Suda. When he got up to go to the Suda, we didn't know at the time, but his oxygenation levels were very low, we believe, and his blood wasn't oxygenating properly. I came in, I wanted to be mechazik him, something. So I asked him about the sugya of saying Hallel on Pesach night in Shul. And my father started rattling off the shittos, and he asked me to get him a sefer, and going through the shittos with me, and talking about it. But he knew them already, but he was just as a chazara. And he became alive, and well, and rejuvenated. And it was the only time that day that he really was rejuvenated. And he said to me at the end of the conversation, you see, David, when I learned, I feel better. That was his avos hatorah. But that wasn't enough for my father. He came to Silver Spring, Maryland, in 1967, right after marrying my mother. And he came to a community that many people did not have the same benefit that he had of a yeshiva education, a post-high school education. And my father was Mashke Vidola, from what he was Makabo, from his Rebbeim, from his yeshiva. He immediately started studying Shiurim, and this wasn't the first place that he did that. When he was in Boston and Harvard Law School, he said Shiurim too. But in Silver Spring, he started saying a weekly Gemara Shiur, which he said until the end of his life, Ad Sof Yomav, even in the house. He took pride in the fact that he, in that weekly Gemara Shiur alone, I believe he went through over 40% of Shas with his Talmidim. He had one Talmud that was there the entire time. He started a Daf Yomi in the shul together with another Rebbe from the yeshiva who was there at the time. I still remember my father Horvin. He said many, many Masechtos in Daf Yomi. I still remember my father Horvin over Masechta Shkolim, Yerushalmi, because Daf Yomi learns Yerushalmi for Shkolim. And I remember my father spending hours at night preparing the shiur. For the first 20 years of my father's presence in Woodside Shul, there was no Rav. The Rabbanim was a committee of people who have learned in Torah V'das and Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yaakov Yosef and Yeshivas Chaim in Berlin that took turns giving shiurim. And my father was part of the rotation. There was mini shiurim, halacha shiurim, yontov shiurim. This is all in addition to his weekly shiur. Throughout his life, he taught and he taught and he taught. He taught people that were much, much inferior to him. A few months ago, I was talking to him, and he said to him, "How do you feel?" He said, "I feel great. I have 4 chavrusas today." 4 chavrusas. I asked him which chavrusas one were. One of them was basically on his level. They'd been learning for quite a few years, kachshim. But everybody else was much more inferior to him. He was basically teaching them, people who didn't have the background. But he felt great because he had 4 chavrusas that day. And that continued with teaching his grandchildren. He learned with my oldest nephew for his bar mitzvah and helped him make a siyum. He learned with my next nephew for his bar mitzvah and make a siyum. And Tzari Rav, he's in the middle of learning with both my son and my nephew, whose bar mitzvah is going to be in the next few months. And he didn't finish, but they appreciated so much the time he spent with them every Sunday, talking, learning with them, taking up the time to learn with the Mishnayos. There was another aspect to Avram's Eliezer. When Avram had to choose a wife for his daughter Yitzchak, for his son Yitzchak, he entrusted it with Eliezer. Why? He knew that the wife of Yitzchak was going to be the next mother in Klal Yisrael, the next aim in Klal Yisrael, and he needed somebody who had the responsibility, somebody that he trusted, who could take on the old and find the right person to be the mother in Klal Yisrael. My father didn't only teach in Silver Spring, but he took on the old of the community in Silver Spring, where there was a shul that he loved, the yeshivas, the day schools. When I was younger, my father was never home at night, rarely home at night. That wasn't because he was working. He worked for the federal government, which as my brother said yesterday in his hesped. My father used to joke around, it was the best paying COLA in America. That was because my father, in addition to saying his weekly shiur, which certainly was the center of his week, his weekly Gemara shiur. The day that he was preparing, the day of his Gemara shiur, you couldn't talk to him, he had to prepare the shiur. But the other nights of the week, he was in board meetings, the shul board meetings, the yeshiva board meeting, the Hebrew Academy board meeting. He was the chairman of the Board of Education of the Hebrew Academy of Greater Washington, and in that role he takes great pride in his accomplishments. One of the accomplishments that he had in that role was that he fought a battle to increase the day, the learning by an hour, for the older boys and girls in the school. That was close to 35 years ago. That means 35 classes have an extra hour of learning for the last 35 years because of the battle that he fought back then. But most of all, taking a chryas was in the shul itself. He felt very strongly that the shul needed a rav. He grew up with a rav and he saw what a rav did for him and how a rav changed his life. And he gave that rav kavod for his entire life. Every time we made a simcha, Rabbi Ramnik was flown in. Tremendous kavod for that rav, as I said, that he got from his parents. And he encouraged the Baal Batim in the Woodside Shul that they needed a rav. But no rav was going to be good enough for this shul, which had so many Harvard Law School graduates and Talmidei Chachamim. And certainly my father was one of the considerations when they were trying to find a Rav. And Rabbi Breidowitz, who you just heard speak, was the first Rav of the Woodside Synagogue. And I know the people who brought in the Rav, one of the considerations was, is my father going to approve? And it took them a long time to find somebody. But my father certainly approved. But Rabbi Breidowitz left the shul to retire, to move to Eretz Yisrael, I'd say about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. And my father was already in his 70s, and he could have said enough is enough, let the younger people decide. But he got involved in finding the new Rav, and he was on the committee, and he was intricately involved in the committee. He went to the meetings in his 70s, and he directed people, Balabatim, who were much younger than him, about what was important to find in a Rav, and what the shul needed at this time. And when they picked Rabbi Walter, he fell in love with Rabbi Walter. Very different couples than Rabbi Breidowitz, but he fell in love with Rabbi Walter. When Rabbi Walter came to visit him in the hospital a week and a half ago, he had a big smile on his face, and he gave Rabbi Walter, even on a respirator, a big Shalom Aleichem. My father took a chrayas for the silversmith community. There were many others that did. But he took a chrayas, and he had the background, the yeshiva background, to know what was right and what was wrong. Eliezer is also called Ben Mesek Basi, the steward of my house. Rashi says that Kol Basel Shel Avraham Avinu was Nizon Hayadei Eliezer. My father took care of all the finances in the house, certainly. We didn't have to worry about anything. He was a brilliant investor. But he took care of Klal Yisrael, the Basel Shel Avraham Avinu. The outstanding mitzvah, besides the mitzvah of Talmud Torah and teaching Torah for my father, was the mitzvah of tzedakah. He got that from his parents. He loved to give tzedakah. He loved to write checks. Every time he made a simcha, he sponsored a wedding in Eretz Yisrael for somebody who was underprivileged in Eretz Yisrael. But he loved to write checks. He got great joy in giving. And it wasn't only to Klal Yisrael, but it was to his family too. He had a generosity it was godless, his generosity. Whenever any of his children had a big financial need, we didn't have to ask him for anything. He came and volunteered to write a check, whether it was a car, a house, not to buy the whole thing, but to help. He wanted to help wherever way he could. Incredibly generous with his children and his grandchildren. When he was with his grandchildren, he would take them out for meals. Incredibly generous person. His name was also Chaim. Father's name was Chaim. My father enjoyed his entire life, all aspects of his life. The night before he went on a respirator, 10 days, 11 days before he was nifter, the last time he spoke, he must have had a premonition that he wasn't going to speak again. He must have known. He kept my younger sister, who was in the hospital with him, up the entire night for 4 hours. And she said he was talking and talking and talking. He didn't stop talking. And one of the things he said there, a theme that he emphasized, was how lucky he was to be in the community that he was, and how he had such good friends, and how he loved his friends, and he loved the Woodside community. And people sometimes have friends in college, and high school, yeshiva, and they lose touch. But he had friends for his entire life. And he had much he appreciated it. And he didn't only appreciate life, the life of his community, but he appreciated his children and his grandchildren. He loved to get on the phone with them. He loved to be with them. He loved to see them. He was always running. In recent years, he was rarely in Silver Spring. He was always at a grandchild's house. He knew every one of his grandchildren. He knew their names backwards and forwards. He knew their ages backwards and forwards. And he was so proud of all of them. He had a tremendous appreciation for the love that he had. And we knew it. A week and a half ago, he was in the hospital. It was a Friday afternoon. I was supposed to go back to New York that day. There were only supposed to be two or three of us in the hospital that Shabbos. And things looked like they turn, to all of us, like they are going to turn for the worse. We all, on a moment's notice, decided to stay in the hospital, and people came in from out of town. That Shabbos, my mother was there, all six of his children were there, and Ido, his son-in-law. And they wouldn't let us all into the room together in the intensive care units, but we asked them if we could just go in for a Shalom Aleichem, and Eishes Chayil, and Kiddush. And they said yes. And we went in, and we sang a Shalom Aleichem that all of us will remember for the rest of our lives. And my father, who was on a respirator, was alert. He couldn't talk, but he was alert. And he was looking around from face to face. We all saw it. Seeing who was there, and there was a contentment in his, face at the family that he had built and the nachas. And we know that too, and Abba, that's why we were there, because we know how much you gave to us from the moment we were born, how much you cared for us, how much you appreciated us, and how much that's how much we appreciated you. And it was so easy for us to be there. My father's partner in life was my mother, and she was an Eishes Chayil. She was the epitome of Eishes Kshayir HaLos Devatun Vayla. Whatever my father wanted, she did for him. If he wanted to go out and be involved in Tzarchei Tzibor, she allowed him. If he wanted to teach Shiur, she allowed him. If he wanted to learn, she allowed him. Her job was to run the house. And my father knew it. My father didn't want anybody else helping him out when he was sick. We tried to encourage him on Pesach that maybe we should get a nurse for a few hours a day. He didn't want to hear of it. Only mommy. Mommy, you were by him your entire life, and Abba knows it and recognized it. And we appreciated mommy, and Abba appreciated it. Abba, we ask you, as you leave a life and a legacy of six children that you were so proud of, a serviceman community that you were so proud of, all the Torah that you taught, and all the Torah that you learned, as you bring that before the Kisei HaKavod, we ask you to be mispower for mommy, that she should have strength to go on, to live without you, and physically. And that all of us should be matzliach, like you want so much from us. And we look forward to greeting you, b'mehera b'yaminu, with Mashiach Tzidkenu.
I'm going to talk on behalf of all the grandchildren about our beloved grandfather, Zaidi. I could go on for hours talking about Zaidi, but since I only have a few minutes, I'll talk about some of my main memories as a grandchild. First of all, Zaidi was a teacher to all of us. My older brother Moshe and I both made siyumim and mishnayos with him over the telephone for our bar mitzvahs. He also learned Gemara and Tanakh with all of us. He was also great at teaching any random facts. He knew about everything and loved to share it with others. You never had a conversation with him that you didn't learn something new. He was a walking and talking encyclopedia. He also knew how to teach each and every one of us 26 grandchildren in their own special way, whether he was explaining a bedtime story to Shlomo Zaroff or telling me about the history of the State of Israel. Another great thing about Zaidi was that he was a giver. He always wanted to give us anything we wanted. When we went with him to the supermarket, whether it was 2 or 22 grandchildren, we all got our own shopping cart, and he told us to fill it with whatever we'd like. When he would take us to a restaurant and we couldn't decide between two dishes, he would say, "Get both. If you don't finish it, I will." And whenever we went to Max's, he'd give us a ton of quarters for the arcade and tell us to come back for more. The last thing I want to talk about is his unique love for all 26 grandchildren. He always told me I was his favorite grandchild, tied with 25 others. And he meant it and showed it in every possible way. Well, Zaidi, as you would say, on behalf of all your wonderful grandchildren, you are the greatest Zaidi, tied with no one. Thank you.
when you have the liberty of speaking, after a lot of great speakers at Alavaya, especially when you have another day to prepare and think about all the qualities that were touched upon at the previous two Alavayas, it gives one a chance to speak about a theme that might not have been discussed yet. I instead will choose to focus very briefly, same Yerachmiel pattern, on something that Rabbi Walter, Aryeh, David, Rabbi Schick, Rabbi Landsman, Rabbi Breidowitz, and Yerachmiel all spoke about. They said that Abba was a real Talmid Chacham, a real Baal Tzedaka, a real teacher, a real Lamdan, a real lover of fun, even and especially at his own expense, who had a tremendously real love for his children, grandchildren, his community, Klal Yisrael. Do you see a common theme here? Yes. Abba was an extremely real person. What you saw is what you got. The one chazal that I will quote is a Gemara in Yuma, Dafayin Beis Amabez. Amar Rava, Kol Tamid Chacham She'ein Tocho Kiboro Eino Tamid Chacham. Any Torah scholar whose inside is not like his outside is not a Tamid Chacham. Yes, so all the earlier speakers got it right. Abba was the epitome of a real Talmid Chacham and was real at everything he did. If you have any doubt if this message was portrayed in the chinuch of his children, just look at the front row. If you look at all six children, and we say in-laws are not in-laws here, so it's really all 12 children, not all are here. I think it's impossible to find more real, genuine people than the children you see in the front row. And as we know, probably many of you heard this, Abba gave about 101% of any credit for chinuch, for raising children, to mommy. So, as Abba was so real, mommy, you get all this credit. I will conclude on a personal note. I can say with full faith and clarity that Abba really loved me like a son. And I am the in-law with the least experience. I've been only in this family 5 years. So Ido, who will speak next, can tell you many, many, many more proofs to this. But I say with full faith and confidence that he loved me and all of us like children. It's a cliche. Many people hear that. Yeah, it's like a son. Son-in-law is like a son. No cliche here. Abba, I beg mechila on behalf of myself, Devorah, Eti, and even Yirmi. Yes, Yirmi, at age 1.5, lovingly mimicked you and said, "Sue!" as we walked around the house. There were times that we know we upset you. And since you were so real, so genuine, so emistic, you let us know. But please forgive us, as we had good intentions. I really love you, Abba, and I always miss you. I have full confidence that you will be a Mali Tziosher for our entire wonderful family and all of Klal Yisrael.
Dear Abba, I'm going to try and speak well at your Levaya. While this might seem trivial to some, it was important to you. You were a great mechanech and a great speaker. A well-delivered drasha was just one of the many pleasures you taught us to draw from life. Sadly, we both know I could never be as erudite or eloquent as you, but I can only assure you that I speak now from the heart. We are in the period of Sfiras Omer. As a scholar, you seem to never tire from the bounty of lumdus associated with this mitzvah, counting days, counting weeks, the Bahag, the Rabbeinu Yeruchim, and of course the annual question, what to do with the bar mitzvah boy who turns bar mitzvah in the middle of Sfira? He began as a minor, but continued as a gadol. Can the counting still be considered one intact act? Every year you would pose the question enthusiastically at the Shabbos table while we nodded with our eyes glazed over. You were fond of quoting Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal. The obligations might be quite different, but the act of counting sequentially exists and continues uninterrupted. Abba, when I met you, I was still an avelis from my own father. I was so young. I came from a different background. I had a very strange name. I had a quirky personality. This was a long time ago. And I had no discernible skills or prospects for employment. This you bring home to Woodside? And yet you immediately embrace me like your own son in every way. The boundless love and giving, the lectures and the advice, the DMCs, deep meaningful conversations, and the clowning around. I'm happy to say that never once, without hyperbole, never once in all the years that I knew you, was there ever even a fraction of a whiff of tension between us. So as I sat down to wrap my mind around the unfathomable reality that you're no longer with us, it occurred to me that I am that katan that became a gadol during Sfira. My father passed in a blink of an eye. I was so young, so stunned. I didn't dare speak of his levaya. What could I say? He was my father when I was a katan, and you immediately took me in as your own son when I became a gadol. As long as I had you to emulate and learn from, my life with a father figure was without hesech hadas. But now you are gone, and my grief is compounded. I called you Abba, no less than I would call my own father. And to mourn for you is to mourn for the both of you all over again. For only now do I truly feel orphaned. But enough about me. I'd like to take the opportunity this one time, no doubt, the only time you would ever allow me to talk about you, to sing your praises in a way befitting a great man who gave us so much. This past Friday night, Rabbi Willa quoted the following Chassam Sofer: "V'ahavta l'rayacha kamocha, ze klal gadol b'Torah." Says the Chassam Sofer, the principle of loving others applies to Torah. Don't keep it to yourself. Share it with those less knowledgeable. Abba, nobody did that better than you. First of all, people can't fathom how brilliant you were. Your good friend, Alan Schick, is a genius. He fixes economies for countries. And he has spent a lifetime being mesmerized by your brilliance. Do you know what it means when Rav Henkin tells the Rosh Hashiva of RJJ that there's no gadol in America that has the mind of this young teenage musmach? Only in Europe, said Rav Henkin. I only saw this kind of genius in Europe. Abba, please forgive me, I know I'm out of line. But people need to know, they should realize what kind of a haftal recha kamocha it is. When such a scholar quits law so he can learn more and then teaches junior high school children and grandchildren patiently and with enthusiasm, a beginner shir, and I mean two beginners, every Tuesday night for over 40 years, plowing through Shas. I said, Abba, how could you be so good if after 40 years they're still beginners? I saw Mrs. Klein here earlier. He claims they're much better. You're much better. I always marveled at this massive intellect. He was expert in astronomy, geography, history, literature, science, everything. He had multiple subscriptions to esoteric publications where the circulation included just him and the editors. We grew to consider it normal that the space between the couch and the window, between the dresser and the closet, between the bed and the hamper, were all lined with books that he knew by heart, practically. Abba used this intellect to make his considerable parnassa. He analyzed horrible stocks worth 3 cents and figured out that they will yield a lousy 8 cents in 6 years, thus nearly tripling his investment. Nobody else in the world even knew these stocks existed, let alone publicly traded. Yet they must have been, for otherwise none of us would have houses. One of the most amazing things we ever saw was how fierce his intellect remained intact these past weeks when on sedation. He was too sedated to sign his own name, but he knew exactly what he was signing. He was so aware of his condition that he wrote down orders for the doctors. If they wanted him to leave them alone, they had to knock him out completely. Rav Breidowitz often speaks of the gift of being a child, always curious, happy about little things, resilient when you fall down. Such was Abba. He might have been a gadol in Europe, but he was 3 years old when there was ice cream for dessert, or when he was grasping some new idea, or when communicating with a new grandchild. His youthful and often playful love of life was ever present. Even in the ICU, Atara and I had the great schus, that special Shabbos, of doing a 3:30 to 6:30 a.m. shift. In that span, I davened with him Shachris Vasikin, I davened with him Musaf while I held his hand. We said Berchas HaChodesh, and he squeezed my hand the whole time. And then as we were leaving to switch shifts, he squeezed it and pulled me back. I said, what could he want? He motioned for the word letter board that we made for him that he really was too weak to use. I brought it to him, and he spelled out very clearly, K-I-D-D-U-S-H. Make some Kiddush. And knowing Abba, he was referring to the Chovas HaYom of Kiddush, but he was also referring to the Chulin Kiddush. If you're going to live life, if you're going to go to shul, if you're going to do the Chovas HaYom, then you should also garnish life with Kiddush. Garnish it with the Simchas HaChaim. The Gemara relates that a man is asked certain questions when he gets to Shemayim. The first three are, did you deal in business honestly? Did you make time for Torah study? Did you concern yourself with having children? Those of us who know Abba know that these three things describe everything that he was. As David said, when did you ever not see him with a Gemara humming his famous sing-song learning melody? Honest in business, how many people do you know who would be mortified by the thought of anything but full and total disclosure of every penny of income tax? He was so vigilant in his honesty and integrity that there's a family rule. Abba is not allowed to speak to security at border crossings or when checking bags because he always volunteers way too much information. And of course, Asakta Bepiri Viribya. Zaidi lived for his children and grandchildren. He analyzed and overanalyzed each of their tendencies and developed theories and algorithms about their abilities and reveled in their slightest accomplishments. Now scattered around the world, all of Abba's children came to his bedside for Shabbos last week. We did not know how sick he was, but his love for us drew us to him, just as it drew all of us here today. And through his illness, and through those tubes, it glowed on his face. Yes, Abba, your place in Shemayim is secure with a thundering yes to each of the questions of the heavenly court. And yet, speak to the grandchildren, and their favorite part of Zaidi is how totally hilarious he is, how he makes fun of himself. Who could forget the garage sale? I mentioned Abba's learning sing-song. Probably all of you have already heard it. But for those of you who haven't, you have not lived. I won't go overboard, but let's just say, that did not stop him from chanting heartily when learning. One day, a friendly non-Jewish neighbor approached us as we were trying to sell mommy's useless trash. Excuse me, she asked, does a monk or a cantor live in there? Whatever do you mean, I asked. I knew where this was going, so I motioned to the bar, get mommy quick, this is going to be very good. Well, every night while I nurse my baby, I hear a melody emanating from in there, haunting, yet frightfully beautiful. Oh yes, there is a very special individual in there, I said. At this point, Bubby was there. Her face was beet red with hysterical laughter, and tears were streaming down her face. Abba got wind of this discussion, and no sooner did the lady finish her description of his cantillations, Abba popped out through the front door singing, Figaro, 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 Figaro. See, Abba, we're having fun. We're not having fun at your expense, Abba. We're having fun with you. Because you taught us so well how to love life, how to value it. Every encounter was a lesson. After every visit to Israel, and every trip back to Israel, you would sit me down and ask me my opinion. What are the worthy stuffs in your town? And then you would start to teach. Aniye Irchel versus outside. Supporting Torah versus supporting other things. And on and on. Despite your brilliance, you made yourself so accessible. So easy to embrace. But Abba, in so doing, you made it so much harder to let go. Every life journey we took, you were with us every step of the way. We just can't imagine life without you. And as for you, your journey to the next world seems so lonely. You never went anywhere without inviting us. Especially not Mommy. Mommy, who devoted her life to being your Ezer Kenegdo. Could you possibly be happy without your Sue? Could even the ministering angels cater to your needs the way she did? The real truth is, that you are more capable of this journey than we even realize. I'll close with the following strange story. It was Chevron, Chol HaMoed Sukkos. We made the mistake of traveling by bus. Don't do it. Going home, there was just not enough seats. Devorah had to catch a plane. The mobs were pressing and trampling to get on the buses. We were doomed. And we all had one thought. Abba is going to get killed here. He's too old and weak and uncoordinated for this. Suddenly, Abba decided he would take charge. He shifted his weight and charged like a linebacker right to the door of the bus. People didn't know what to do. They couldn't get by him. The bus driver finally said, Adoni, ta'ale. And then Abba answered with his classical Hebrew. Eini yachol I efshar, bli hashmoneh shali. So the bus driver announced to the mob, clear the path for the shmoneh shalo. Abba turned around with a triumphant grin and raised his cap and waved it and yelled to us above the crowd proudly, Hashmoneh shali! Hashmoneh shali! As the seat parted for us, when push literally came to shove, Abba's love for us propelled him to pave a pass for us. Abba, now that you've embarked on your final journey, Abba, wave your cap once more for us, for all of Klal Yisrael, which you loved so much and gave so much for. Ha'am Shali, Ha'am Shali, for Eretz Yisrael, where were you so proud to have children living in an apartment of your own? Ha'aretz Shali, Ha'aretz Shali, be a Melech Yosher for us as we hang precariously toward his left of our ruchnias and our very existence. Klal Yisrael needs you. Who better than you to argue on our behalf? I would like to take this opportunity to thank all our dear friends for their outpouring of love and support. You've been so amazing. Almost Woodside level, I should say. Rav Malinowitz asked me to stress what a void he and all of us feel in Ramat Beit Shemesh. Really, Abba, you left an indelible mark everywhere you were. People have approached me and told me they feel a loss as great or greater than if they lost their own parents, Chaliba. I'm sure that this sentiment would be echoed around the globe in Baltimore, Flatbush, Detroit, Passaic. Such was the mark that Abba left. And finally, for Yaakov Shlomo Zalman and for Shlomo Zalman, both of whom are named after your father, otherwise known as Yaakov Shlomo and Zalmi, whose bar mitzvahs are coming up. They and we, the rest of your loved ones, are left to complete the learning that your beloved Zadie started. This is now our task for all things, to learn to love each other and stay together like Zadie taught us, and to complete the work that he started. Yehi Zecher Baruch. We love you so much.
הבנים שיבואו לכאן.